Welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. As a contrast to the current unserious Canadian political system, this is a place where well-informed, thoughtful people can have serious conversations about serious topics. And the Orange mission, fundamentally, is to fix the money so that we can begin fixing Canada. I usually record a weekly episode with Lucas, but he was away with family over the Christmas break. And so I started compiling some notes that I had about education. And so I decided to record this short solo episode introducing how sound money changes education. So this one is for parents or aspiring future parents. If you're not a parent or don't aspire to be one, this might not be interesting to you. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with others or donating at CanadianOrangeParty.com to support the show. I'm going to be aiming for about 42 minutes or less for this episode. And I appreciate you turning in to listen. Current block height is 931,292. Hash rate is 1,011 exahashes per second. And one Canadian dollar currently buys you 793 Satoshis, or sats for short. And if you're not familiar with what that means, Bitcoin can be divided into 100 million smaller units, just like $1 can be divided into 100 cents. And those small units are called sats. Let's get into it. So my objective for this episode is to help fellow parents make good choices for the benefit of their children. And I'm going to say some things that might make people uncomfortable. And they might even make you want to doubt what I'm saying in order to avoid confronting the decisions or changes that you're faced with if what I'm saying is true. And now that you know this information, not taking action might be more painful than taking action. At least that's my hope. So throughout this episode, I'm going to use the term government education institution, and I'm going to share some dark truths about the current system. But I want to remind everyone that in the end, government is not actually the problem. Fraudulent currency is the problem. And because everything is built on top of money, everything becomes corrupted if the currency is corrupt. And that's where we find ourselves right now. And that's why by fixing the money, we allow ourselves an opportunity to fix everything built on top of money, which is everything. It includes politics, education, corporations, healthcare, everything. And like I said, some of the information here is dark. And the nastiness of the current government education system is a direct reflection of fraudulent currency. So just remember that. With that said, I hope to offer value by offering fellow parents or those who want to become parents alternatives and options about how they think about learning and development for their children. So I just want to start with a metaphor that I think is very fitting. And that is that if you take a healthy fish and you put it in dirty water, the fish will get sick. The fish is not the problem. The dirty water is the problem. And so I think it's helpful to think of money like water in this metaphor. And when we switch to sound money, we're effectively switching to clean water. And so not only does that water not make fish sick, even if you put a sick fish into healthy water, it will heal and get healthy. And so trying to fix education or trying to fix politics or even healthcare without fixing the money is kind of like trying to help the fish without ever cleaning out the water. And no meaningful progress can be made until the water is changed. And the application there is that no meaningful progress in Canada can actually be made until we fix the money. And so that's why this podcast is really about fixing the money so we can start fixing Canada. So I have a young child. I plan to have more children. And so education is something my wife and I spend a lot of time thinking about. And I think that under a sound money standard and within the age of technological, acceleration that we're living through with language models and AI, the very notion of education, I think, changes significantly. And so, like I said before, I'm recording this to share the nasty truth about government education facilities so that parental awareness can expand. And I just want to expose how anti-learning these facilities are. And I also want to offer, more importantly, I want to offer alternative perspectives on the benefits of taking more responsibility for your child's development and the feasibility of actually doing that. Because it doesn't have to be black or white. It doesn't have to be my kids either go to government institutions or they don't. There is a middle ground, and I hope that this podcast stimulates discussion and offers current and future parents compelling reasons to think twice before sending your kids to institutions that hinder their physical and mental development. So if you're a parent and you want to raise strong, self-led, critical thinking, sovereign children, then this episode is for you. And if you're a parent who's tired of government education systems that create weak, obedient, compliant, dependent humans, which is basically what it's optimized around, then this podcast is also for you. I think there's a lot of well-intentioned humans working within the government-run schools. And, the truth is that the government-run schools of today operate with the objective of creating obedient citizens. That is fundamentally what they revolve around. And if you actually understand child psychology and learning, very quickly you realize that government facilities, which are commonly called schools, are frankly where curiosity is killed. And they serve as a place to train children to be compliant, obedient adults. And this might sound hyperbolic or exaggerated, but if you spend as little as 5 hours learning about the education system and how it works, you really quickly realize how anti-learning and anti-human it really is. So I want to share how we're thinking about learning for our children and offer alternative ideas of what education could look like under a sound money standard. I don't want to tell people what to do. I don't want to shame parents who send their children to government institutions. I think everyone's doing their best. And I think a lot of parents have a sense that the current education system is outdated and broken. But without any viable alternatives, there isn't really much optionality. And so I want to propose alternatives and pragmatic ways to implement them so that parents can feel empowered to make better choices. And another thing I want to say is I want to encourage parents to read a book called Dumbing Us Down by John Taylor Gatto. I think this book exposes really well the hidden curriculum that trains kids for compliance instead of critical thinking. And it also offers some good strategies for transitioning kids from school-based to self-directed learning. So, great book. So, I got four parts in this episode. Firstly, I want to just distinguish between education and learning. Second, I want to talk about how the current system came to be. Third, I want to talk about how sound money changes education. And I want to finish by sharing how our family is thinking about education when it comes to our own children. And again, this is not me telling anyone what to do. This is just me sharing how our family's thinking of it, in hopes that it gives other parents inspiration and motivation to think differently about educating their children. So, education versus learning. What's the distinction there? Education is formal structured learning, and is composed of standardized knowledge within institutions. So, education follows a set curriculum. It's assessed with grades and it is formal and highly structured. And if we contrast that to learning, learning is a much broader process of acquiring skills and knowledge through experience and play, right? That's a much broader definition to kind of unpack. And the reality is that kids learn best through play. That is the OG learning technology for human beings. And learning through play is how children see achieve self-mastery. And it's driven primarily by curiosity and an intrinsic desire to explore and apply information and understand the world that surrounds kids. And that is a fundamentally different mindset than what's offered in government education institutions, right? They are essentially anti-learning because of the way they're run. And so I think it's important to just kind of understand a bit of history of how the current education system and how government learning institutions came to be the way they are. And the dark truth is that the system works perfectly as designed, right? You might think it's broken, but when you actually understand the incentives and the goals, the current education system works exactly as designed. And the problem is that it wasn't designed to be a place for your kids to learn or flourish. It's designed explicitly to create obedient citizens. Right? Governments, the most dangerous thing for a government is a population capable of critical thinking. Right? The ideal for a government is obedient workers that toe the line, don't ask questions, do what they're told. And so the modern day education system is largely based on this Prussian education system from the 18th, 19th centuries, which had a major influence on all the modern education systems around the world. And the objective of this old system was to create well-disciplined and obedient citizenry that would serve the state and the military. This system that was created emphasized standardization of education and uniformity. So it's basically like a production line where kids start at the beginning, they get spattered at the end, all standardized, all forced to conform to these norms, and all kids were taught the same things in the same way. And the base premise of a centralized state-controlled education system being the best option is absurd when you think of it. And I think just underneath all of this, if you think the government is acting for your benefit and for the benefit of your children, you're eventually going to find out the hard way that you've been deceived. The government exists to control and manipulate citizens. That is its purpose. That's how it maintains this fragile illusion of control that allows it to be viewed as a legitimate institution. Government in and of itself is not necessarily bad, right? It's just a bunch of people making decisions on behalf of the many and coordinating in an efficient way. But when government is built on a lie, on manipulative fraudulent currency, everything that the government does must reinforce and protect this lie and manipulate citizens. So handing your children over to the government and forfeiting your duty as a parent has consequences, right? Forcing kids to learn uninteresting and useless information is anti-learning, and frankly, it's cruel. And forcing kids to be inside for most of the day, deprived of sunlight, and constantly being exposed to artificial light is super unnatural. And forcing kids to sit in chairs for the majority of the day is also super unnatural. And frankly, it's damaging to their physical health. I used to be a physical therapist. I saw problems all the time with kids who were highly active, primarily based on the shoes they were wearing and the fact that they had to sit in chairs all day. So it has consequences. And again, the unfortunate reality is that curiosity and critical thinking die off in government education facilities. And that's an incredible shame because the amount of potentially world-changing entrepreneurs that get suppressed within this environment is just a big loss for humanity. And like I said before, government schools have essentially turned into a production line, and this is not compatible with child development. So that's just kind of a primer of how the system currently came to be and some dark truths about what it's designed around and how anti-learning and anti-human and anti-child, right? Like, schools, the government schools literally stop kids from being kids. And if kids are being kids, they get punished. And in the extreme, the really sad cases, kids actually get drugged to suppress their childlike sort of default programming of wanting to move, of wanting to do fun things, of wanting to play. That's what a child should be doing. So let's talk about how sound money changes education, because I really think it's a big catalyst for changing how we think of education. And you know, when families save in a form of money that can't be inflated, they go from a situation where life is constantly getting more expensive, which means parents have to work more and more. And we switch over to a situation where life gets more affordable. And over time, parents can work less and less while maintaining and actually improving their quality of life. And that sounds crazy, right? That sounds too good to be true, but that's the reality when you go from a fraudulent currency that is constantly inflating away purchasing power and forcing people to do more and more just to stay in place, to a system where sound money allows you to save your time and not get diluted away, life gets more affordable. And so saving in sound money really creates optionality and choice, because when your time isn't being stolen and your savings aren't being eroded over time, you have much more time to save with, to spend with your children. And you have more time to take more responsibility for their development, which includes structured learning. And once you realize the importance of separating money and government, which is where you get to eventually when you start to learn about money, start to learn about sound money and Bitcoin, you eventually get to a point in that journey where you discover the importance of separating education and government. Right? Like I said before, I'm going to harp on this. Government schools don't exist to help kids learn or flourish and be kids. They exist to create obedient, compliant citizens. And so, just the notion of dropping off your kids somewhere 5 days a week for either daycare or quote unquote school is largely driven by the fact that most people can't bring their kids to work. And most parents have to work quite a bit in order to make ends meet. And so, when you save in sound money, and can work less because the purchasing power of your savings is growing, you have this surplus of time to spend with your children. And along with that, you have less requirements for external care. And so, like I said, when families save and sound money, the parents can work less, the parents have more time to learn about the nasty nature of government education, and they have more time to explore alternatives and talk with other parents who are exploring alternatives. So by saving in Bitcoin, you're accepting more responsibility, and therefore you're being given more freedom, and that trickles into your parenting and how you think of education. And so in my experience, when people do accept more responsibility for their time and their money, this also leads to people inevitably wanting and being able to take more responsibility in other domains of their lives. And when I hang around with Bitcoiners, not only are they having lots of kids, they're accepting much more responsibility for parenting than the fiat norm allows for, I think. And so instead of teachers at these government institutions being the primary source of learning, parents can play a much larger role in learning for their children. And frankly, parenting is the OG version of teaching, right? We didn't always have these government-run schools that everyone sent their kids to. You know, parents or communities or groups of parents served as the primary teaching group for kids for a long time. And I think we're going to go back to that when we move beyond this weird period in history where we experimented with fraudulent currency and we go back to a sound money standard. So, like I said, when you learn about separating money and state, you eventually realize the importance of separating education and state for the sake of your children. And when parents need to work less because their money is eroding, they have more time to spend with their kids, more time to think about learning and education, and more time to implement alternative ways of learning that align much more with child development and are much more efficient. So I want to talk about how I'm thinking of education with my kids. Like I said, my wife and I talk about this frequently. We talk to other parents and other families about this. And so when I think about it, I kind of put structured learn or I put learning into three buckets. The first bucket is structured, focused, independent learning, which requires a fairly small number of hours per week. And that time is spent learning fundamental skills like math and language, right? Foundational reading, writing, math skills that are sort of like the bedrock for being able to learn higher order concepts and ideas. So that's bucket one, structured, focused, independent learning. Structured two is, or bucket two is unstructured social play with kids of different ages. Right. And so when you actually look at the curriculum of government institutions today, you realize that very little of it is useful. And so school essentially becomes more or less a social learning environment. And so bucket two is unstructured social play with kids of different ages. And bucket three is self-directed play and learning that's done at home with parents, can be done with relatives like cousins. And this kind of thing is very, can be very broad, right? It can be anything from tending gardens, learning how to grow food, cooking meals, caring for animals, learning self-defense, training focus and concentration. Like these, it's a pretty broad category. And I think for that reason, it actually makes up the bulk of child learning. So, three pillars, three buckets, structured, focused, independent learning required. But actually is a small portion and a small amount of time when you take the whole sort of learning environment into account. Bucket two, unstructured social play. Play is the OG learning for kids. It is what they should mostly be doing. And then bucket three is self-directed play and learning done with parents, grandparents, cousins, friends. That's a broad category, but that learning is just as important. And should actually be a much larger portion of the learning time than the structured learning. And so right now my daughter's two, and until she's about 10 years old, my wife and I plan to be her primary teachers. And so there is some structured learning, like I said, around reading, writing, math, money, health. But mostly she just needs to be outside, eat good food, get quality sleep, and have a whole lot of self-directed play, primarily self-directed play until she's like 10. And that's super counter to what we currently think of, right? We think of, homework. We think of heavily structured learning with very little unstructured play, right? We look at, I think, play as this frivolous thing that's not useful, that doesn't help kids grow into well-adjusted adults. But the truth is that play is the ultimate way that kids learn. And by facilitating self-directed play, they will learn far more and develop much more robust neural circuits in their brain than forcing them to sit in an unnatural environment and learn non-stimulating, useless information out of context. That's the truth. And so for us, finding aligned social groups of other families that allow her to play with kids in sort of a multi-age setting, overseen by adults, is really important to us. And I think a lot of social learning happens through that, and there's a lot of utility to social learning. Like I said, I think schools mainly are a social learning environment because when you look at what kids are actually learning in government institutions, it's useless, mostly useless at best. At worst, it's things that need to be unlearned and lies and untruths that are biased and manipulated information. And so when we think about structured learning blocks, she's not old enough for this yet, but it's sort of, 60 to 90 minutes, a few of those sessions each week, coupled with myself, coupled with her mother. And a big part of that is to teach her focus by reducing distractions and reducing context switching and helping her be able to focus on a single task for a certain period of time in order to learn something effectively. Another big thing is just time outside every day. Prolonged periods of time outside every day is critical. And I heard this from Zach Bush, who is a really smart human. I did a podcast with him a while back, and he said that he gave his kids journals to take outside. And in that journal, they would write about things they saw. They might draw pictures of things that they were seeing in nature, a plant, an animal, whatever it might be. They could take notes about what they heard, what they experienced. And so we're going to do that for her. And every day there'll be time outside with a little journal for her to write about what she's doing. And I think looking back on that journal as a keepsake when she's much older will be really special. But it's also just a really powerful way for her to engage in self-directed independent learning and to explore the world. It's kind of like a way to apply some structure to this outlet for curiosity to learn about the world around her. We also plan to have a quiet space filled with books that serves as sort of a relaxation area where she can just pick a book, read, play with toys, or just have quiet time. And I think sometimes if kids don't spend enough time outside, kids are going to be rambunctious. They have a lot of energy. They need to expend that energy, or else it just kind of might get aimed towards things that parents don't want. And I think that if you let your kids spend a lot of time outside and have a lot of unstructured play, the reality is quiet time, reading time, relaxation time, is actually feasible, right? You don't have to force them to sit down and do something quiet and focused. If you give them the outlet to expend the energy, they can benefit immensely from that, and they will be able to do that. But it requires parenting. It requires helping them understand the value of quiet time, the value of focus. And so, when our daughter's old enough to read, she'll be asked to read probably a book a month, and then to tell us about what she's learning. And we're not going to tell her exactly what book to read. We might have a group of books that she can select from that are appropriate for her learning level and allow her to learn important skills for that period of her development. And I think there's a lot more space to help kids learn by doing from an entrepreneurial perspective, right? She might have her own podcast where she shares what she's learning. She might even have her own little mini business where she creates products and can actually sell them to people and get paid in Bitcoin. So these are the kind of things where there's a lot of learning baked into these things, but it's not done in this abstract, structured way, right? If she has an interest with animals, for example, maybe a project that she'll end up doing that incorporates math and language and finance and businesses. Okay, if you want to run a little animal shelter that takes care of animals for people during the day who can't care for them, how do we actually run that? How much space do you need? What's the square footage, right? There's math involved in that. How do you communicate the offering to the people that might be interested? There are some English skills there in terms of writing writing up some copy that maybe would go on a website. How do you run this business so that it's profitable and makes you money? You know, so there's so many ways to cover so many domains of learning that are done in school in an abstract sort of non-applied way that can be done at home, overseen by parents with not a huge amount of effort, that can check all those boxes in a much more playful, pragmatic, and fun way for kids. And I think that's key. So I listed off some critical skills that my kids are going to learn that aren't taught in government education institutions and that I was never taught in government schools. First one is self-defense and a respect for violence. I was put in martial arts when I was younger, not for as long as I would have hoped, and maybe from as young of an age as I think is appropriate. But you know, learning things like striking, grappling, and jiu-jitsu at a really young age, I think that is the anti-bullying immune system. So that when kids have con when kids are able to wield violence and learn about violence, not only are they less prone to apply violence in a bad way, but it gives them this self-confidence that no one's going to pick on them, no one's going to hurt them because they know how to hold their own and defend themselves. And I think that's really important. Two, principles of health, including food, sleep, movement, the mind, the importance of community. I never learned that. That's super fundamental knowledge just to be a human that lives a good life. Money and personal finance. We don't learn anything about that in government institutions. I don't think that's a mistake because if you taught kids how money worked, they would have a lot of interesting questions that probably some teachers would have trouble answering because most people don't understand how the monetary system works and how fraudulent the Canadian dollar actually is. Number four, Bible study, reading scripture, studying it, understanding it. No religion. I'm not talking about religion here. I'm literally just talking about reading some of the fundamental texts that contain huge amounts of wisdom read by the most people in the world, worth reading, worth understanding. And then lastly, teaching about property rights and fundamental freedoms, right? Like our kids aren't taught this. Again, I don't think there's this evil genius pulling the strings telling teachers not to teach kids all these fundamental elements of being a human and a well-adjusted adult. I think it's just the outcome of incentives of government institutions existing to create obedient, dependent citizens means that they are not taught anything that would make them independent and sovereign. And so that's how just it came to be. And I think knowing that is really important because it's the truth. And it also allows a different set of variables to consider when you're making decisions for your kids. So those are, you know, critical life skills that aren't taught in government education institutions are super critical. And I think should be part of learning at a young age. Self-defense, principles of health, money and personal finance, Bible study, property rights and fundamental freedoms. Super important. And some things that my kids won't learn, that kids are forced to learn in government education institutions, are biased versions of history. Right? Kids aren't taught true history. They're taught the history that has been decided to be taught to them, which is often a very highly curated, biased subset. My kids won't be taught gender confusion propaganda. Hopefully, we're on the other side of that, and it's already peaked, but that is a really gnarly, nasty thing that kids are automatically exposed to. My kids aren't going to learn complex math at a young age unless they express a self-directed interest in learning that, because I think it's just not applicable in today's world to learn that at such a young age. It's not developmentally appropriate to try and force kids to learn complex math without a practical application. Right? Learning math within an application of, like I said before, creating a business plan or determining how many square feet are in a garden, you know, how many seeds you need to plant X amount of carrots, you know, like that is applied math that actually makes sense because there's a practical application associated with it. And I think another thing that I learned that I really was very had little value in my life is just abstract chemistry, right? It's fine to know atoms and the periodic table, but without some sort of application, without a playful element to it, it's just work and drudgery. And no kids should be forced to learn things that are uninteresting and not applied in real life. So Yeah, just the very idea of learning things without context or application is just nonsense. And at that point, it becomes useless memorization and a waste of time. And so I think what I'm trying to say is we need to make learning interesting and playful by making it self-directed and enjoyable. I think it's we need to prioritize learning useful things. Most of what's taught in government institutions is filler, is crap, is useless. Sometimes at best, it's useless. At worst, it's stuff that needs to be unlearned because it's just false or disempowering. And, I've met a lot of Bitcoiners who homeschool their children. And one thing I've learned from them is that literacy and math skills can be acquired far quicker and far younger than current government institution standards. Right? Kids can learn how to read and write in a fraction of the time at a much younger age without ever doing homework. And they do that by being given an opportunity to go into engaged, focused learning sessions that use effective learning techniques. And again, the highest form of play for kids is play. And even structured, focused learning should feel mostly like play. And teaching things like, her mother, my daughter, is two, and her mother's going to teach her things like cooking and emotional intelligence and French, because my wife is from France. And I can teach her things like caring for animals. We have a dog, and there's responsibility associated with that. And she can learn the fundamentals of what do you need to do to care for an animal? What are the fundamentals of money? My daughter's two, and she already knows. This is what she says. When I say, what do you think about fiat? She says, fiat bad. What do you think about Bitcoin? Bitcoin good. How many Bitcoins are there? 21 million. Who created it? Satoshi Nakamoto. That is the extent of her knowledge, but that is more than 99% of adults. So, and self-defense. I mean, self-defense is just so important, something I wish I would have learned as a very at a very young age, because it would have prevented a lot of fear I had around bullying in school, in early grade school. This idea that, this ratio of one adult to 30, 40 kids who have potential access to immense amounts of sugar and who are basically learning. It's like Lord of the Flies in the schoolyard sometimes. And that can be a really scary place for kids who are on the wrong end of bullying. And so I think self-defense and teaching your kids what is good and what is wrong, and how to wield violence effectively is just so important, and it's such a missing ingredient, right? And you can just imagine this notion of a school, if it wasn't done by government institutions and was done by private organizations that brought to market things that parents actually wanted, surely there would be groups of parents who want these things, where your child could go. And in a small learning, multi-age learning group of 10 kids to one adult could learn self-defense, could learn about money, could learn principles of health, could learn how to cook food and grow food in a garden. Like, there is really just this endless opportunity to improve the way we think about education and to allow free market options to replace this legacy and frankly harmful template for government education institutions that exist right now. So I think we're leaning into this time where, again, when you save in some money, you increase your optionality. You're able to take more responsibility for your kids' learning as a parent. You're able to have more time to talk to other parents and potentially think of ideas of ways to facilitate learning in small group settings that are required for a much smaller portion of time than what a typical school week would be, and can provide immense value in terms of their ability to learn through play and to grow into well-adjusted adults that are fit to thrive in whatever world they find themselves in, right? Adaptable kids that are able to use technology to learn about the world that we're moving into, because it can be drastically different than the world of today. It's almost like government education institutions teach kids about the world of yesterday in such a way that makes them dependent and kills their curiosity. And I think we just have this huge opportunity to reinvent and reimagine education, which is probably a combination of parents taking more responsibility for parenting, spending more time with their children when they have to work less, when they're saving in sound money, and free market, entrepreneurs in the free market, which might even just be groups of parents coming together to create better alternatives that they want their kids to be part of, having the opportunity to create better ways of having their kids get the social experience of being with other kids in an environment and also incorporating self-directed effective learning that's enjoyable and allows kids to look forward to going to these places instead of it being drudgery. Not to mention the fact that homework is just not, no kid should have to go home and work. It's ridiculous and it's unacceptable. And it's just so normalized. The word homework is so normalized. We accept it as the best way of doing it. But it's time for a new era of education. And so when you escape the fiat slavery system by saving your time and sound money, you have more time to spend parenting your kids. You have more time to spend thinking about different ways to raise and educate your children and facilitate their learning. And yeah, that's all I wanted to say for today. I hope that was useful. I hope it wasn't too ranty. My hope is that this is an opener for further discussions about education. If you are a Canadian, you're a parent, and you share my displeasure with the current education system, government-run education system, that literally is just a production line for creating obedient, dependent children incapable of critical thinking and a system that essentially just removes the natural childlike curiosity that kids have for the benefit of making them compliant and obedient. And it's really sad. And so I think that was part of my motivation for recording this, was probably part rant, but also just I think we come to better options by sharing what we know, sharing the perspectives that we have, and sharing the things that we intend to try or are trying with our children. And by hearing what other people are doing, potentially it opens the door to more optionality or more choice for parents who hear this. So if you're a parent and you found this helpful, please share it with another parent. You can email me, CanadianOrangeParty@protonmail.com is an email that there's a group of us that check that email. I'm one of them. Put the subject line education podcast and share your opinion. And if you want to record an episode to share how you're thinking of education and learning with your children, and it's different than the government institutions and it's different than anything I mentioned, please reach out. I would love to record a podcast with you because I think mostly this podcast is about imagining a future for Canada built on sound money and how different parts of society improve when we fix the money. So thanks for listening. If you want to support the show, you can donate at CanadianOrangeParty.com. If you haven't already, check out EndInflationCanada.com. It is our public awareness campaign to help people understand the fraud of fiat currency and how to protect themselves by saving in Bitcoin. So study money, take care of yourself, opt into freedom money, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for being here. Ciao.